Hi, everyone. We're going to get started here. You are in Davidson Ballroom B. This is small-scale CO2 capture technology. So if you meant to be somewhere else, we won't judge you if you walk away now. For everyone else, welcome. We are really excited to have Amy George here leading this talk. My name is Emma Vodder, and I'm the membership assistant at the Brewers Association. I'm also the speaker coordinator for this event. With that in mind, I'm going to ask that if you haven't already, I would love it if you could go on your app and rate not only this talk, but the other talks that you've been to if you haven't done that already. We definitely want to make sure that this event is reflecting what you all are looking for. With that, I would like to introduce Amy George, who is the founder and CEO of Earthly Labs. She founded Earthly Labs in 2016 to capture and avoid 1 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide from small-scale emission sources. In her first year, she was a finalist for the Carbon X Prize, speaker at Earth Day Texas, and featured as a top company at New York Times Climatech. With the help of her brewing industry advisors, Amy created market-driven CO2 recovery solutions to meet the needs of small-scale brewers. Please join me in welcoming Amy George.
Thank you all for coming. As I mentioned, for those of you who weren't here, we're doing an interactive sort of Q&A on a website called Sli.do, sli.do, and the event number is D195. If you go there, you can post anonymous questions, and I'll moderate those throughout, along with some polls. But the reason you're here are to hear stories from these amazing friends of yours, so I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we'll jump into the presentation.
My name is Brian Peters, yeah, but you can call me Swifty, and I am a brewer at the Austin Beer Garden Brewing Company in Austin, Texas.
My name is Alex Veneman, and I'm a quality manager at the Cellus Brewery in Austin, Texas.
And my name is Josh Hare. I'm the founder and president at Hops and Grain Brewing in Austin, Texas, and I also chair our Texas Craft Brewers Guild.
So thank you all for coming today. Quick question for you to get a sense. How many of you are from the U.S.? Awesome. And how many of you are outside of the U.S.? And of those, how many are from Canada? Yeah, you guys are. You're on to CO2 recovery. Well, thank you all for coming. Final question. How many of you like this planet? Awesome. You're in the right place. So I started Earthly Labs with the vision to capture and avoid 1 billion metric tons from small-scale emission sources. Brian was an early advisor as we initially started looking at natural gas sources. And so we were studying his natural gas boiler, and the CO2 stream from your boiler is about 8% CO2, and so the energy required to get at a purity needed for beverage grade, what took a lot more, both R&D and energy costs. So we quickly moved to fermentation, and Brian both advised us on developing our own solution and acquiring other technology. So we pursued the second path, and we're here to tell you about that today. Again, most of you in the room know amazing leaders who have been doing CO2 capture for decades or years. I spoke to a gentleman from the UK who was at Heineken or a part of that portfolio, and they did it 20 years ago. So the question has been affordability and accessibility for small-scale brewers, and that's what we're here to talk to you about. So again, in our research and in our conversations with dozens of you, we have learned that the use per barrel is significant in terms of the deviation. So in Austin, many of our brewers are well below 4 pounds per barrel, but we do have a range up to 21 pounds per barrel, and the national average is in that range. Again, we have a poll on the Sli.do app for you to answer the question of how much you use per barrel. What we have found is many people don't actually know. They haven't done that calculation. Again, primary use is in fermentation, canning, packaging, pushing the beer, cleaning the tanks. So we have identified or helped our customers identify leaks as part of our process and a part of our audit, just looking at what's happening in your brewery before we deploy systems to capture and reuse. So the solution itself includes a unit about the size of a sub-zero refrigerator, 6 feet by 4 feet by 5 feet, so pretty small-scale system. It's designed so all of the parts are accessible for easy maintenance. We have a digital HMI with CO2 capture software, so you get a real-time feed on how much you're capturing and then how much you are collecting in the door with your standard temperatures, pressures, alarms, and readings. We have a foam trap, and we have storage systems along with standard maintenance and quality services if you elect those. So within sort of a half day, you can have a system up and running, depending on your environment. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Brian to share with you his story on the pilots.
I think I'll stay seated. I don't know if I trust standing. So I got involved with Amy as a friend, and she had a good idea. I was looking for CO2 recovery and realized that nobody was doing a small-scale one. And we decided to go ahead and test out the ABGB. ABGB is a brew pub at 1,700 barrels a year. We're not going to produce much more than that, and we don't really want to distribute, so it's all on-site sales. So we kind of have a known volume, and we were wondering if we could make the machine, the CO2 recovery machine, work at that scale. And no one had tried it at that scale. So we put it in place, and the process required some tweaking for sure, and we got it really dialed in. It took about a week, and once we got it dialed in, we realized that I actually do not produce enough CO2 to actually make the machine work. So we were figuring out what the lower limit was, and that, you know, these guys will talk about how much they produce, and they were able to actually make it work. So at that point, we were able to get it to actually run. When I evacuate a fermenter, when it's under pressure, I can go ahead and collect all that. You get about 4 pounds, 5 pounds of CO2. And we realized that we could still run an experiment, collect all of that CO2. It wasn't necessarily the CO2 directly from fermentation, but during the fermentation, it was collected once the tank was spun. So we collected two of those and were able to get enough CO2 to... Is that the next slide? Oh, here. To carbonate a batch of beer. Basically, not a batch, but like a keg of beer. We weren't able to actually capture enough to do a whole batch. But we had a pale ale recipe that we designed, and we put it... Put the CO2 to the test. We use air gas for our primary supplier, and we carbonized both of the batches. It was carbonated both, and we ended up with some pretty interesting results. I was wanting to do this because I thought it would be really good for the environment to get, you know, to keep the CO2 out of the environment and to not have to buy CO2 again. But the quality side of it wasn't something that I'd really spent a lot of time thinking about. And then we were able to run this test and do a qualitative test. It was 100% blind qualitative test. And the results were pretty stunning for me. I did not expect to be able to clearly differentiate between the two so easily. But we are, all of the brewers and everybody we tested for the brewing side of the business were able to do the blind triangle test, and we got it right every time. And by right, I mean there was definitely a difference in the CO2 in the final product, which was the biggest for me was aroma, was noticeably better with the recovered CO2. The overall palate is softer, and so some people didn't. Traditional CO2 that you buy gives beer like a CO2 bite, more of a CO2 bite. And so some people preferred the CO2 bite, and they actually picked the one, you know, the commercial one. But what was it, about 7 to 5, something like that. 7 picked earthly, recovered CO2. But it's a preference at that point if you want more of a CO2 bite in your beer or if you want a softer carbonation. But the aroma alone was just amazing. And then the other things I noticed was that the lacing and the head retention was completely different than from the commercial to the recovered. Much, much better. Lacing 100% all the way down, you know, identical everything. Identical beer, identically rinsed glasses, and it was something I didn't expect either. So these are things that we were just, like, going into not knowing what we're going to find out. And this is a lot of the brewers were going to look and make sure that the CO2 wasn't going to produce anything that made it taste different. I wanted to know if it was better, and we found out that it tasted better. So that, to me, that was, like, one of the biggest revelations. I already wanted to get the machine because I can keep the CO2 out of the environment and I don't want to buy any more air gas. But the last thing is that the quality went up. So my experience is very positive with it. At the moment, the system is being... we're designing a smaller system. We're working together to try to tweak what we have right now to be able to use it in the 1,000 barrel range. You know, I'm at 1,700, so we're going to try to make this thing work. We have to scale down some of the equipment, but we're working on a prototype on that. So at the moment, all I can say is I love it. I just can't buy one for myself right now, but
so
I'm ready.
We're excited to design the system with Brian. Quick show of hands, how many of you are under 2,000 barrels? So we'll be here next year to showcase that system for you. So... Alex, you want to share your story?
Sure. Celis is kind of a new old brewery. The current facility has only been operating about. The brewery has only been operating about a year, but we have a long history. We were founded by Pierre Celis in Belgium. That brewery eventually became the Hoegaarden Brewery. From there, Pierre had retired and started a brewery in Austin, and that had fizzled away, and so we're sort of the reboot of that. It's run by Pierre's daughter, Christine, and her daughter, Daytona. We are a pretty large facility, relatively speaking. We're planning on producing about 24,000 barrels this year. About two-thirds of that are Celis products, and the other one-third being our contract partner brewers. We do plan to expand next year and in the future. We brew a lot of Belgian white beer. It's our flagship product, obviously. And one of the concerns that I had is that beer during fermentation can throw a lot of sulfur, so I was curious how the earthly system would handle stripping sulfur compounds out. So one thing that's a little interesting for us is with the system, as we've tested it, we can recover about 85% of the CO2 that we use. We're very CO2 heavy operation. We're using closer to 17 pounds of CO2 per barrel. So we're definitely on the higher end of the scale in our usage, but I think that we can still actually make the system work for us. So my background is actually in analytical chemistry and engineering, and I worked for years in materials for solar cells. And after that, I was an environmental engineering consultant. So you might assume that I'm here for reasons such as Brian was saying, but that's not the case. The reason why I'm here is because the first week of operation, our accountant was asking us why the hell we were spending so much money on gas. And we were having this conversation in the tank farm, and as I'm talking to him, I'm sitting there looking at a bucket just bubbling and all that money going into the air. So, we're here... primarily to reduce costs, but we also, I think as a brewery and as a culture, we want to be seen as innovators and to be working on new technologies and being innovative in general. I'm also a quality manager. I'm not the owner of my brewery, so I think I kind of come from a different perspective. You know, as the quality person, you always... view any new process with fear and trepidation. It's one more thing to keep you from sleeping at night. So what I was primarily concerned with is, you know, can you implement a system like this and not cause yourself quality problems? CO2 is an ingredient, and if you have problems with your ingredients, you have problems in your final products. Who here has actually seen a CO2 analysis from their gas supplier? Oh, that's actually more than I expected. I had not thought to ask. If you want to flip slides, Amy, you got it up there. So this is the sort of thing that you're going to get. So you'll have the ISBT guidelines on the right. Those are your limits for what are in there. And, you know, like anything that's made to a specification, as long as you're under that, then it's in spec. Earthly went ahead and had actually tested our commercial gas, and so it was in spec, but, you know, there's certain things that are in there. This is an analysis for the gas that we captured from our brewery with the Earthly system. It's essentially non-detect for everything except for a small amount of methane and less methane than was in the commercial gas. So, you know, and I think this is what we were seeing with all of the places where the Earthly system was tested. You basically are getting below the detection limits for any of these materials. So the reason that you're really interested in this is because during fermentation, you're stripping whatever is in your beer with those little CO2 bubbles. And so whatever, you know, acetaldehyde, diacetyl that's in there during primary, that goes into your gas and it's going out into the atmosphere, or in this case, your CO2 capture system. So obviously you don't want to spend all this time, you know, making your beer taste good and then turn around and carbonate it with something that's going to make it taste green. That's obviously a huge worry. So the system performs very well as we've shown, but what I'm concerned with is whether or not that is maintainable and it's going to happen every single time, year in, year out, and you're not going to have any oopsies. The other thing is oxygen is actually on here, and if you notice, you're allowed 30 ppm by volume oxygen. So we all know we don't want oxygen in our beer, but if you're carbonating, there is probably oxygen in your gas. The Earthly gas, we are seeing no oxygen. And so that's really nice, and it's a potential way to knock down a little bit of oxygen pickup when you're processing your beer. Flip sides there for me, Amy. So, again, quality guy, I want to make sure that this high quality of gas that we're seeing being produced by the system is maintainable. And that's my worry, because I'm not going to buy a system that looks good and works sometimes and then it doesn't in the future. So we just really wanted a kind of a stupid, cheap way to do this, because these beverage gas tests run into the thousands of dollars, so it's not something that you're probably going to use as a quality check regularly. The Earthly system uses an activated carbon filter, and the design basis for that was assuming about 500 parts per million VOC go into that. And we've actually measured it since, and it's in our breweries, it's typically more like 50 parts per million, and that's going into the inlet. There's another piece of filtration equipment in there that actually removes a large majority of what's going into the inlet. So what's actually going through the carbon filter is even less. So essentially it's massively overbuilt on a design basis. So as an engineer, that makes me happy because it's safety that's built into the system. The current production unit doesn't have a VOC sensor. It's all based on time. So it's sort of like the Brita filter on your fridge. You run it for so many gallons or whatever, and then the light goes on and you got to change it. The Earthly system works very much like that, but it has a lot of safety built into it. So I'm pretty comfortable that the system itself is actually well-designed and is unlikely to produce problems with VOC. But of course, you still got to check. And so what we came up with was really easy test. It's cheap. You guys probably all have the stuff to do it in your own breweries. We went out and we bought two brand new corny kegs, bought two brand new carb stones. All the tubing was new, everything was brand new, and everything was identical. We even cut the tubes to the same lengths because why not? And so what we were essentially doing is just carbonating the water and then doing sensory on that water. So can I taste stuff from the gas that made it into the water? But to kind of step it up a notch, what we did is we sealed up the corny kegs, and they have the little vents on the top. We opened those vents and purged a whole bunch of gas through. So we were using a 20-pound cylinder of commercial gas. I more or less emptied that cylinder and ran probably about 30 pounds of the earthly gas through the other corny keg. And really the idea was there is I just wanted to magnify any difference between the two. You're running gas through, it's not really carbonating it, but whatever is in there, in that gas, is going to wind up in your water. So we did sensory on that, and to a very high confidence level, we can tell them apart. So statistically, there's a difference, but it's just so obvious when you taste it. The earthly gas, even though we'd run lots and lots of gas through this water, it tasted like seltzer you bought at the store. The stuff that we had run from the commercial cylinder, and again, we're concentrating it, so we're making the difference more apparent. It had a very metallic taste, kind of plasticky. Pretty much everyone just, you know, you got the yuck face when people tasted it. So it was just a useful test for us to kind of tell the difference between the recovered gas, and I'm really comfortable that the recovered gas has substantially lower contaminants in it. And then this is something that you could do very easily on, like, I don't know, a weekly basis or whatever you're comfortable to do, just as a quality check to make sure that your filter is working. Maybe after you change out your carbon filters, do that as a test to make sure it was installed properly. And it has the fringe benefit, and now you have some, you know, seltzer water in the brewery. Switch that over. So the other big worry is, of course, oxygen. All brewers worry about oxygen in their beer. We were struggling to find a nice cheap test for this, and I got to say, we still haven't found something that I'm happy with. But the gold standard for anything like this is using an oxygen meter. So how many people here actually have an oxygen meter in their brewery? All right, good. I know it's an expensive piece of equipment, you know, costs more than my last car. A lot of smaller breweries probably don't want to or can't justify that expense. But if you've got one, quality control on the gas for oxygen is easy. You just hook it up and measure it. I will say that the earthly system has an oxygen sensor on the inlet. So when we were dealing with the prototype unit, at the beginning of fermentation, you're pushing air out of your fermenters. And we would stand there with a meter and just check it until we got below about 1%. And then we would feed that into the earthly system. And that's how we're still getting, you know, non-detectable limit or levels of oxygen in there. So my complaint with that was you're not going to have cellar people down there with the oxygen meter, you know, checking for that every day. That's a really likely source of something to be messed up. And a lot of breweries don't have the O2 meter. So the production unit actually has an O2 sensor on the inlet, and it will shunt gas away if there's too much oxygen in it. So it's a nice, robust system that will prevent these sorts of things from becoming an issue. And it's also, I think, it charts, right? So you can actually look at the inlet concentration of oxygen on your thing. So you can kind of monitor the sensor and, you know, might even find out that it's useful for monitoring your production. The one last thing that I would say is I saw a lot of hands for the O2 meters. Who here has calibrated their O2 meter? Good. All right. So there's a large fraction. I will say these things need to be checked. If you're not running like PPM levels of Calgas through there, you're going to be surprised at what you are or are not measuring. So it's just basic quality control. But I think the earthly unit does a good job, and I think it's something that can be implemented without a lot of worry about causing problems to your process.
Thanks, Alex, for sharing. So we'll turn it over to Josh Hare. I wanted to highlight one additional bonus case study, and then to celebrate Adam with Austin Beer Works. Both Austin Beer Works and 512 Brewing also tested the system, ran it through their quality test, and ran oxygen tests as well as sensory tests. Each brewery has their own process. And came to the same conclusions you're hearing on the stage. And again, we wouldn't be here without hundreds of hours from breweries from Austin to Colorado that have both tested the prototype system to make it better and the commercial unit out of Dry Dock in Colorado. So with that, on to Josh.
All right. So I opened Topps & Grainbeck in 2011. We have been primarily focused around the Austin area for our distribution footprint, making about 8,500 barrels a year, and are in the process of getting ready to open a second facility just south of Austin in a little town called San Marcos. That'll have an initial capacity of about 15,000 barrels, and we'll start expanding around the state. We also have, you know, a very heavy focus in our tap room, and through that we have, over the last 7 years, have developed out a very robust trained sensory panel, as well as our quality control lab. And, you know, inside of that lab we run UV-Vis, we have dissolved oxygen meter, we have a number of instruments to test, you know, obviously just the quality of our fermentation, quality of our production. And then on the sensory side, we use Draft Lab, if you're familiar with that software. If you're not, definitely check it out. It's a really, really neat software to use for sensory analysis, really robust, and it has an incredible reporting. So at our brewery, our focus around production has always been to be the best environmental stewards that we can, and through that process also try to develop innovative ways to improve product quality, both to save, you know, money, save the resources that we're using that impact the environment, but then at the same time hoping that, you know, those investments that reduce cost also improve the quality of our product, because we don't, while we are very environmentally friendly and conscious of what we're doing, we would never make an investment that would cause our product quality to suffer just so that we can reduce resource intensity. So there's a few pieces that, you know, as we've grown as a brewery, that we've tried to make sure that we're reducing our inputs. So CO2 being one of those, we have we've gotten down to about you know, as you can kind of see, we were like 3.5 to 4 barrels or pounds per barrel. We've been able to get these reductions through a lot of different process improvements that not only improve the quality of the product, but they've also, you know, cut down on our CO2 costs. But even then, CO2, as all of you know, is one of your big costs and cost of goods. And for a brewery of our size, we are still reliant on fairly frequent fill-ups from our gas supplier. And I'd love to think that they were incredibly reliable and on time, but those are variables that you have to deal with. So one of the things that I was really blown away by, my background is not really deep in science. I've always been kind of a crunchy, curious person about what's going on in the environment, but I don't necessarily have the background to know exactly the answers to the questions that I have. But one thing that I realized, we had met with a natural gas company that was starting to sell CO2, and this was a couple of years ago, and I had never really researched where CO2 that we buy, you know, beverage-grade CO2, where it comes from. But knowing the aromas around natural gas plants and that is actually a source of CO2 that is delivered to breweries was somewhat concerning to me. Our, you know, primary house yeast strain is also a very big sulfur producer. And so it got me very curious as to, you know, obviously we see reduction of that sulfur during fermentation, but how much of that is not carryover from fermentation, but is actually coming from the CO2 that we're using. And so we had met Amy and heard about this system. I was really fascinated by it because, one, it's a way to have a very tight control over that part of your supply, but also the idea of being able to remove that cost that you spend quite a bit of money on per month on that CO2. So the approach that we took with it, we installed the system. We used just flex hosing to feed from all of our fermentation tanks. We do, you know, as Brian was mentioning, like we do produce enough that can run all the time when we tested the system. And we tried to approach it to ultimately determine how it could impact the quality of our product. So we took a batch of our Kolsch. So we tried to get something that would show, you know, impurities in gas very easily and not have a lot of big, robust flavors that could potentially hide that. We captured CO2, did some tests on that, saw where the purity was. We filled kegs of carbonated Kolsch with our gas that we buy from a supplier, as well as keg that we carbonated with the earthly CO2. And then we took that into our sensory panel. So we were able to run dissolved oxygen on both of those kegs, and then we ran them through sensory and did basically a blind side-by-side test And in Draft Lab, you have the ability to go through and define attributes that you're picking up as you're going through sensory. And one of the first things that I was very surprised by is across the board with our trained sensory panel, almost everyone was able to identify between 3 and 5 more flavor attributes in the beer that was carbonated with the earthly gas versus the traditional gas. So that was fascinating to me. There were multiple comments on softness. So the mouthfeel was much softer with the earthly gas. It didn't have quite as much of a sharp bite, which we determined may be hiding some of those flavor attributes in beer. And so that was a really neat thing to see. Obviously, we're trying to, the raw materials that we put into our beer, we would love for all of them to express, you know, their full potential. And so being able to just adjust the CO2 supply to do that is pretty awesome. We then did stored tests on those kegs. So we held on to them for 90 days just to see how the flavor attributes changed over the course of that 90 days and continued to see over each of those tests that the identification of flavor attributes was higher in the kegs that were carbonated with the earthly gas versus the other. And we saw almost from a true-to-brand test, which is another analysis that we do on all of our core brands, we saw an extension of almost 30 extra days of on a blind sensory test, our staff being able to identify that as still true to brand with the gas that was captured from the earthly unit versus traditional CO2. So clearly something great was happening with that unit. We were able to see, obviously we could produce or capture enough CO2 to completely supply our operations in the brewery. I think, obviously, there's such a broad difference between usage of pounds of CO2 per barrel produced across breweries, but it seems like if you can operationally get your usage in a 4 to 5 pound per barrel range, very easily be able to produce enough CO2 for an operation like ours. We can about 60% of our beer, so across all of those that packaging equipment, we would theoretically be using a lot of CO2, but that. What we've been able to, or what we could capture, would supply enough to service all of that. So we actually just took delivery of the first commercial unit this week, and we'll be setting it up to start at least to just supply our packaging hall. So we'll have captured gas in a dewar that will feed directly into our kegging line and our canning line, and then continue to run these quality and sensory tests to make sure that. That we're continuing to see, an improvement in quality, improvement in shelf stability. And we even saw, from a DO measurement, a difference of between, depending on that course of 90 days, we were seeing a single digit, but still a difference in lower dissolved oxygen, 6 to 10 ppb in the recaptured carbonated beer versus the other. So, beverage grade gas is definitely... there are thresholds that you have to stay below, but as we all know, 5 to 10 ppb of dissolved oxygen can make a difference in quality, shelf stability, and especially for us as we're looking to start expanding. Texas is a gigantic state, so, while distributing to just another major metro area doesn't sound like a big deal, sometimes that's, 4 hours away from where the brewery is. So it's nice to be able to know that what we're sending out has the potential for better shelf stability, better quality, and then, a huge benefit that we saw is obviously the environmental sustainability component, but, our industry, surely you're all aware at this point, but our industry thrives because of our storytelling ability. Our customers like to drink our beer because they get to hear how the brewery started, they get to hear from the employees that work there, and something like this is an incredibly transparent way to tell a story about being a good environmental steward. It's something that we're super excited to be able to show off when we give tours of the facility, and to be able to take the lessons that, some of the pioneers in the brewing industry from an environmental sustainability standpoint, to be able to take the technology that would otherwise cost in the millions of dollars and be able to apply that on the scale of what most of our breweries are is awesome. It's an incredible opportunity for all of us to benefit the environment, benefit our product quality, and then continue to grow our industry in a way that shows that we're conscious, that we care, and it's incredibly marketable. So, it's selfishly, it's fun to be able to be one of the first to trial this because we get to talk about it as being one of the first and being able to show it off. So, that was a lot of what what our tests were around was on the sensory side. So we in trialing this, we wanted to be able to show that, you know, and across at least our three breweries, I think we all were able to approach different elements of testing. But we're super excited about it, super excited to get back to Austin and get it fired up in the brewery and keep rolling with it.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Alex and Brian. So I thought I'd read some of the questions that came over and to give you the stats on the poll. I was checking my phone for that. So the polling question was, how many pounds per barrel do you use? And the statistical number of those in the room was 29% of you use on average 10 pounds per barrel. So that was the most. And then the next two were 3 pounds was 14% of you, and 12 pounds was 14% of you. So those were the three kind of buckets. And you can see that live on the Slido slide. Ryan asked me to point out that many of your cities have net zero emissions goals. I know in talking to a lot of brewers in Canada, there are both tax credits and incentives as well as specific goals. The global goal for the world in terms of achieving Paris climate talks is 60 gigatons. We're raising our hand to help with 1 gigaton. That's our goal. Carbon capture will have to exist for all of us. The international scientific bodies estimate about 13% of the solution needs to come from technologies like this. I thought with a vision to keep the planet cool, I'd start with the coolest industry I know. So thank you all for indulging us, and also want to celebrate these brave pioneers on the stage and many in Texas and around the country that are helping. So again, to kind of recap the key benefits you've heard about, the environmental benefit, the quality improvement, and the cost reduction. Again, some of the insights we gleaned, we were surprised about around product quality, and we'll continue to study the market receptivity. What is the market demand and the customer preference around beers powered by recovered CO2? So we hope to share that with you next year, and some of you can be on the stage as well. Some housekeeping. Some of you got little white cards, and if you didn't, there's more on the table asking you if you want to fill out a survey. If you do so, we'll provide you an audit on your brewery. So there's that. And the first of you that get to the table after the event can get a T-shirt. The rest of you will be sort of entered to win, if you will. To switch over to the polls and then open it up for some live questions. We got some really good ones, by the way. So one of them was, how much does the unit weigh? So it's 1,400 pounds is the unit itself. Again, for shipping to your brewery, it comes on a pallet. Like Josh described, it arrived there this week. What size do you need to be to make it work? And there were a lot of questions around the sort of maximum and minimum size. Right now, our focus is 3,000 to 20,000 barrels, but we've talked to a number of innovative larger breweries in the 60,000 barrel plus that are isolating sections of their beer, so just their sours or just the tap room. Again, the quality insights are one that for those that are very environmental, they would like to do that. You can also chain them together, so you can use multiple units, and a few of our brewers are doing that as well. Another question we got were how frequently do you need to change out the filters? The current cycle time is every 30 run days, so if you're using it every day, it's roughly every 30 days. And we have automatic monitoring for that, so it forces the unit to turn off to force that changeover so that you don't forget. And again, that's really the key maintenance component, so we have built that into our solution pricing. We've tried to design the pricing so that it is very accessible for small-scale craft brewers, both in offering a leasing model as well as the cost itself. So the payback, again, for somebody who is paying a lot of CO2 for CO2, and we've seen a big range even in our Austin market from, you know, 10 cents a pound to 38 cents a pound. Worldwide, we've seen a range from you know, pennies per pound to $1.80 a pound. So your payback is obviously a factor of how much you're using and then how much you're paying. So, but again, we're really targeting that 2 to 3 year range, which we know is a desired target for most of our customers. Another question, you know, how do you set the system up? How do you actually evacuate the tank? So we have two methods. You've got flex tubing and or stainless steel piping. Some of our clients actually have manifold systems, but we've used flex tubing at the exit of your fermentation tank, and we literally plumb that right into the tank. We have T's to bridge the tanks together, and then a methodology we establish with you, a best practice for your production, depending on your production schedule. So it's a pretty easy process. Some of the other questions. We talked about weight, the physical evacuation of the tank. So we talked about the modularity of the system. Again, you could have one or two units. And as Brian described, we're working on a smaller scale system. And we're also working with Austin Beer Works on a larger scale system to address some of the larger scale breweries. So I think with that, we will answer all of your questions. So I will post those online. And if you want to drop your card in, we are going to offer a webinar with our chief scientist to address a lot of your technical questions on how does it work. And some of them have come up here. But I want to make sure we allow you, anyone who wants to come up to the mic to ask these guys great questions, feel free to do that.
Considering we're a small brewery, and let's say we're not recovering enough CO2, and considering also the flavor benefits that we get from recovered CO2, and we use our commercial CO2 to carbon batch, obviously there'll be differences in the flavors. Could we run our commercial CO2 through that machine as well? I don't see why not, but...
Yes, you can use your commercial CO2. We did that in testing for sure, and you get a pure product. We also have customers who are going to do hybrid models of using commercial and recovered, some for volume like Alex was describing, and others as a migration path. So you can do both. Another question is the energy use per hour. So it's 2.7 kilowatts per hour. One of the key goals we had in designing it was to make sure it was a net positive, and so that was a key design constraint for us as we added things to make sure it's low energy, and we'll continue to look for ways to even reduce that further.
And yeah, too, just to clarify, so when we were trialing the system, the only method that we had with what we were capturing was to just like force carbonate kegs, because we weren't collecting enough to carbonate, you know, a 60-barrel bright tank. But that is, when I say like we're going to use it for all of our packaging, I mean bright tank all the way through. So yeah, what we'll capture will be used for carbonating, and then also, you know, the entire packaging lines, keg and can on that, because we isolated everything such that we knew it was carbonated and then, you know, pushed through with earthly gas versus the traditional CO2.
Hi guys. Well, I'm really excited about this possibility, but I have a concern. I like really hope it's not a bummer. This is, so if we're getting all of our current commercial carbon dioxide from things like natural gas burning and coal and other industries, and so if they're not reclaiming that CO2, they're releasing it into the atmosphere. And so I guess I'm just wondering if it's like a zero-sum game. If we're reclaiming our CO2, but then they're releasing theirs into the atmosphere, we don't really actually save CO2. So have you guys done any research on the effects of that, or am I hopefully like maybe missing something?
So I think it gets at the larger carbon capture marketplace. So the, again, global scientists recognize that even if we all sort of did solar or took actions now, it wouldn't be enough to solve the problem. I was at an Earth Day event where, you know, Bill Gates' fund talked about what they're investing in and why, and carbon capture technologies is one. But in parallel, we need to look at sequestration and conversion technologies. And so my hope, my dream of a product roadmap for the world, and what the big thinkers are imagining is we will have a future state where we're capturing and converting our excess CO2 to something even more valuable. So whether that's a biofuel, fuel, diamonds, baking soda, there are a lot of really big innovators out there thinking about that. And so we hope to then offer the brewers another way to make money on the captured CO2. So the scientists know that we have to do that, and to the extent brewers are forefront of that innovation and then benefit economically from it, that's my hope. So, okay,
thank you.
The technical limitations that set that 3,000 barrel lower limit, does fermenter size play a part in that, or is it purely the volume of CO2 that you're producing?
That's a great question. It is fermenter size. It's the flow and the pressure of the gas. So if you do have, it's possible we could do a smaller brewer who has larger fermentation tanks. So that's a key qualification question. And as Brian said, if you have a lot of excess gas in your bright tanks, again, if you do no natural carbonation, it's possible that itself is adequate. So it just depends on your proposition of how you're tackling the problem.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions, actually.
Just for reference, that 30-barrel tanks that's, I guess, the smallest that we tested, and it produced enough pressure to run the system.
We do about 1,700 barrels a year, but we have all 30-barrel
tanks. Yeah, so that's the sizes of tanks that we use, so those produced enough pressure to operate the system.
I'm Marty from Pelican, and we are interested in the larger size units. And I have two different questions, one of which would be foam capture. We have some blow off, some tanks blow off, some tanks don't. You know, you've got yeast and schmutz going down the drain. Have you had experience with separation?
Yeah. So the system comes as part of it is a foam capture drum. The real question is how do you integrate it into the system? Do you, wheel that around each fermenter? Is it more convenient to plumb a manifold and then have your foam capture at the end of that? If you do such a system, you also have to keep in mind that, you have a high CO2, low oxygen environment with a bunch of stuff, organic, in it. So you got to make sure that cleaning and that's a CIP-able manifold, so that you don't get some nasties growing in there.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. The other thing is does the system involve reliquification so that you're able to attain pressures needed within the brewery? So
yeah, it's liquefied.
Yeah, so like the old Wittemann systems would take a low-pressure tank, filter the low-pressure tank, compress, use ammonia compressors to liquefy, and is it? Can you go into that just a little bit to how it goes from, loose ambient gas to reliquification?
So we, part of the technology, the three stages, the third is liquefaction. So that's part of the unit itself. So we are producing liquid CO2 and pumping that into the storage. We'll have to visit with Pelican about what your needs are in terms of your storage solution. So that's the biggest variability depends on what you own or lease and what new units you may need.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So it depends on your system. We'll have to look at what pressures you're at and what we can, and if you own it or lease it. So those are constraints. Everyone's slightly different.
I'm just curious about the threshold for the incoming CO2 or gas. Does it need to be 90% plus? Or?
So we've tested at that. Or lower, we're going to continue. We have that oxygen sensor, so we're going to continue to monitor what that bound is. But it's pretty pure gas you guys are producing anyway.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this from a perspective of, we're a brew pub, and we use CO2 in a lot of capacities. It's not just the actual fermentation, right? We serve off of brights, so all the beer-driven pump engines that are there, that's all CO2 gas. Is there a minimum operating pressure that you need? So, fermentation, you can produce, I'm sure, you can build up pressure upwards of 30 PSI, but a lot of places, all our tanks are one bar, so we can't go over that. is there a minimum output pressure that you need to actually run the system?
So it's, you know, it's captured into a Dewar. So just like you would lease from, you know, whoever you get your commercial gas from. Mm-hmm. So you basically, from there, if you have, you know, however your system runs currently, just imagine the captured and liquefied CO2 going into those tanks the same way that you currently would. So you can step them down with regulators. You can, you know, but it's a, yeah, it's a liquid bulk tank that is ultimately filled with recaptured and then liquefied CO2.
So from a pressure standpoint, then, you know, if we have this ambient CO2 that's kind of just blowing out of the beer pumps, we could capture that from the environment then? Or do we need to physically, like, put it in line?
We'd probably need to speak with you about your exact system. Our system operates at 150 PSI. Obviously, ABGB, Brian can talk to pretty low pressures in their environment, and we're able to operate there.
Okay.
Yeah, but love to talk to you more.
So how much does it cost?
It's affordable. Let's talk further. It is not $1 million. No. Yeah. So again, our goal is to have payback. Some of our customers are in months and in years, but our target is under 2 years, and that's been most of our customers' experience. So depends on how much you're paying for CO2, but I think that sort of, you want to hit our last question?
Yeah, real quick. So I guess I was thinking, like, the minimum threshold of 2,000 barrels. Is that strictly a financial thing, that the payback might be longer, or is it a matter of not producing enough CO2 to really make the system work?
It's so the limitation is in the inlet flow of the compressor. So you have a max of, I think, like 12 pounds per hour, but if it's really, really low, you're not generating enough gas and enough pressure to feed the system. It's like the other gentleman was saying, it really has to do with your tank size and also whether you're doing a lot of ales or whether you're doing a lot of lagers.
Thanks.
So to address the question in the room more specifically, our overall solution is well below $100,000 all in. Again, far less if you don't need a lot of the ancillary parts of the system we talked about. If you would like a discount, you can drop your survey into the bowl there, like we were talking about, and we will follow up with a CV discount for all early adopters. We are producing units for our customers right now. We have another production batch starting on June 1. And so we wanted to offer any CV early adopters a bonus for coming out today. And also, as I mentioned, we will have follow-up webinars along with copies of this presentation and case studies, and then update you as Josh deploys the first commercial unit on the benefits we're seeing, both in terms of the technology, ease of use with his team, any market feedback that we get in terms of customer preference or demand. And again, I appreciate all of you coming out today and want to celebrate the brave pioneers here on the stage. I think we can imagine a future state where this is part of how you do business. It's the fifth ingredient in your beer that you probably don't think about too much. And so it provides a platform for amazing innovation on top of all the benefits these guys have highlighted so well. So again, thank you all for coming out. One last question here.
Yeah, so the panel cited improved flavor and aroma, mouthfeel. Have you guys been able to tease out or extrapolate which elements and which, I guess, percentages in commercial CO2 as opposed to the natural reclaimed CO2, which those elements are beneficial or that you've noticed improve the flavor and stability, and could the system be manipulated to actually create a custom flavor profile of a CO2 that would suit the brewery's needs?
So I think when you're talking about that sort of thing, it's really like a research question that's going to require expensive stuff. Like you're going to have a GCMS and a lot of equipment to actually tease that out. I think we're more at the point now where it's like we want to limit it, and you know, it's not necessarily at the point where we can control that.
Yeah, we definitely plan to. I mean, we don't have that equipment in house, but we plan to start sending out samples of recaptured and our commercial as we go through sensory trials to try to somehow back our way into what's getting removed or what, you know, what's coming from commercial gas that's not coming from the recaptured that's, you know, enabling more flavor attributes to be identified. But right now, all we knew was that we were identifying more. And so the next steps, once we have it, you know, actually commissioned and running every single day for a while, we'll start doing trials to see what it is in commercial CO2 gas that, or, you know, that's interrupting that identification of flavor.
Well, thank you all for coming out. David with Closed Loop, who is our reseller in New Mexico and Colorado, is at the door. For those of you that fill out your survey, if you're up there, you can get a shirt. And I'd love to visit with you all more. Thank you.